Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So should Officer Kimberly Potter, Brooklyn Center, Minneapolis, should she lose her job? Should she be charged with a felony, manslaughter, negligent homicide? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. After the show yesterday, our program yesterday, of course, the body cam footage of the officers involved in the Dante Wright stop in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, was released. And again, Brooklyn Center is an inner ring suburb of Minneapolis, right?
It's near where George Floyd was killed.
And, you know, Amy, you tell me what stuck out to you, but just to set the scene here, one, according to police, Dante Wright was pulled over not for an air freshener hanging from his rearview mirror, but for expired
tags on his plate. Let's get the story right, people.
The outstanding arrest warrant for him, which his brother said he probably didn't know he had an outstanding warrant. I doubt that.
Oh, please.
The outstanding warrant was for illegal possession of a gun, possessing a gun without a permit, as well as resisting arrest, fleeing police officers in a previous incident, just so we understand what those particulars that were misidentified or not identified yesterday are. And so once the outstanding warrant came up, you had two officers, one on the driver's side, his side, one on the passenger side, approach his vehicle. He gets out of the car, obviously at their request. Hands behind his back. The one officer is attempting to handcuff him, and you can see he's already starting to resist a bit, because then the senior officer, who is Kimberly Potter, the female, she comes over and puts her arm on Dante Wright's arm to sort of stabilize him so the other officer could put the cuffs on him. And at that point, he spins around, gets out of, you know, having his hands behind his back before they're cuffed, gets into the car. And that's essentially the body cam video that you see with the, you know, the ultimate moment, if you will, where he's shot.
And he's pulling away in his car, and she said, "I just shot him." And the other officer, the African-American officer standing there, said, "Oh, wow."
So she says, "Taser, taser, taser." And this is what you hear in terms of the training. She thought she was grabbing the taser. She obviously had her firearm. She discharged her firearm. And then he rolls away after he's shot. This is the police chief Gannon, Brooklyn Center, Minneapolis, Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, explaining what he believes occurred.
As you can hear, the officer, while struggling with Mr. Wright, shouts, "Taser, taser," several times. That is part of the officer's training prior to deploying a taser, which is a less lethal device. That is done to make her partners aware, as well as the subject, that a taser deployment will be imminent. During this encounter, however, the officer drew their handgun instead of their taser. For informational purposes, we train with our handguns on our dominant side and our taser on our weak side. So if you're right-handed, you carry your firearm on your right side, and you carry your taser on the left. This is done purposefully and is trained. As I watch the video and listen to the officer's commands, it is my belief that the officer had the intention to deploy their taser, but instead shot Mr. Wright with a single bullet. This appears to me, from what I've viewed and the officer's reaction and distress immediately after, that this was an accidental discharge that resulted in the tragic death of Mr. Wright.
I mean, she's 48 years old. She has two adult sons. She's been on the department since for 25 years. She joined when she was 22 years old. Her husband's also a police officer in a neighboring suburb. It was a horrible, horrible mistake. But it was an accidental shooting. She was not targeting him because he was black, as, of course, the community activists accused her of doing.
They always put it off on something. I was afraid, or it was an accident. We want accountability. We want this officer fired.
Dontae Wright was killed by this white officer because she did not see his humanity. She did not believe that black lives matter.
Really? I mean, she didn't believe that black lives matter? Yeah, I just thought it was a horrible mistake.
That's the absurd demagoguery of the identitarian activists. But, you know, just because it was an accident doesn't mean you don't face consequences. I mean, manslaughter is without malice aforethought, you kill someone.
Right. Remember Muhammad Noor? He's a Minneapolis police officer, Somalian American, who shot the white woman who called in a possible rape in the alley. He shot her by accident. Horrible mistake. He's spending 12 and a half years in prison.
Yeah, the context is important here. He resisted arrest.
Right.
This is going to be lost in the coverage. He resisted arrest. So when it comes to accountability and the calls for accountability, what about the accountability for escalating that interaction with police? I mean, was lethal force justified in this case? No, and it was accidentally deployed. But if you don't escalate, you're in cuffs, you're taken to the station, you're bonded out, you're still alive, you have your day in court, and that's how it goes. I don't understand. It still fails. I fail to understand why there is not the simple, repetitive message, as repetitive as we say, wash your hands and social distance.
Yep. Stop when police ask you to. Obey police officers.
Adjudicate your claim in a court of law, not on the street.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
And should that 26-year veteran officer of Brooklyn Center be faced with disciplinary action, lose her job? Is that mistake, that accident, severe enough for her to lose her job?
They said they're not going to stop protesting, and they did again last night until she is fired. She's on administrative leave right now.
Yeah, I don't care.
Which is common.
I don't care what they say. We have rational conversations here. So what they say they're going to do, the race hustlers, the identitarians, the hysterics, the NAACP president, national president, who said whether it be carelessness and negligence or blatant modern-day lynching, the result is the same. Another black man has died at the hands of police. No, actually, it matters. It matters if it was an accident or a modern-day lynching, Derek Johnson. It's so ridiculous. And so do you want to have the collective we, do we want to have rational conversations about these things, tragic circumstances that occur, terrible things that happen, terrible accidents that are made, and think about how we want to organize a free society, what role police should play, how we should understand our role as a citizen or resident even? Do we want to have that conversation, or do we just want to go back and forth with people who think burning down and looting a Dollar Tree store is an act of, you know, revolutionary pursuit of justice? Ridiculous. Ridiculous. But should she be fired? Yeah, I think so. Should she be criminally prosecuted?
Mm. You know she is.
I don't think manslaughter. I think you can make out a manslaughter charge. Criminal negligence. I'll tell you the complicating factor, and it's the reason that the contributing reason why Dante Wright is dead, because he put himself in a position where a terrible accident could occur, was the resistance. He escalated the confrontation with police, and there were three police officers there. I mean, again, I know this is a young man, but he's a young man with a young child. I mean, how are you not thinking about your kid? I want to be home with my kid. I want to raise my kid. Why am I going to escalate any situation that would put my safety in jeopardy when I have a kid at home? Why would I
do that? Because people feel empowered and they're ignorant, or they just don't want to follow the law. I don't know how else to explain it. If you can explain it to me, Dan, that'd be great. But I don't. You're right. You had a child. He had his whole life ahead of him, and he decided not to comply.
For people that want to just defund police, rinse and repeat. How does that play out ever in the advantage of the person resisting police? What do you think you're going to accomplish? And if police are this ever present threat to you because of your skin color, this is how the argument goes. Right. Then you've had to consider what you would do if confronted with the police officer. And the choice that you've made with malice aforethought is to resist, because that's going to work out how? Verlon on the South Side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Okay, Dan, first, before I make my statement, I'm going to answer your question that you just asked. This is the narrative that's being pushed by the left. Black people shouldn't be policed by the police because it's racist and it stems from slavery. That's number one. And number two, they're using the same phrase that the police use. They fear for their life. So they're not in control because it's an automatic inherited fear for their life. That's why they resist. Okay, so now I'm going to say my statement. My statement is, we've finally proved Eric Holder right. We are a nation of cowards, but now, not how he meant it. He made a general statement to raise the conversation about race, but we, as Republicans and conservatives, not all, but most of us have given in to woke ideology as far as being shamed into silence. And the businesses voluntarily throwing in with the left. We have given this country over to the Marxists, and I don't see any way out of it, because we don't have the will to fight. We it's not enough of us that have the will to fight for what's right. So hey, they're going to keep burning it down. I told you this a year ago, you was having this conversation on this show. Every black man that gets shot by the police, they're going to riot. They're going to do it. And it's just going to get worse and worse and worse until Americans like yourself and me stand up and say no. And until we stand up and say no, this is what you're going to get each and every time.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Verlon.
Thanks, Verlon.
Rashida Tlaib, MF for Spice, she of the Socialist Spice Girls. It wasn't an accident.
Oh, really?
Policing in our country is inherently and intentionally racist. Dante Wright was met with aggression and violence. I am done with those who condone government-funded murder. No more policing, incarceration, and militarization. It can't be reformed. And that's the party in power, Rashida Tlaib. And she's representative of the party in power, by the way, her views. This is what to Verlon's point, this is what you're capitulating before, Rashida Tlaib, in this viewpoint. And again, deploying the taser in this situation, I don't think that would have been problematic at all, because he resisted arrest and he was getting in a vehicle which he could then use as a weapon.
Right.
Lethal force? No.
We got a text message. The guy who fired the gun on the train tracks, causing the death of two police officers, got 1 year in jail. The police officer in this case should get 1 year. Terrible mistake on both of their parts.
Lewis on the South Side.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. A long time ago, I saw this Western
Okay. And in this Western, the guy said, he say, I only have two shells in this rifle. He say, I want you to keep them, I want you to keep it pointed at the Mexican. He said, if the Mexican move, shoot him. And then the guy says, in the back, he say, I'll ask him to turn around. Okay, with that in mind, okay, what I'm trying to say is that you and Amy, I think you, both of y'all are concealed carriers, right?
I'm not telling you that information.
Okay, well, excuse me, I'm sorry. Well, to be a concealed carrier, the first thing you have to do is you have to know how to arm that weapon, okay? A taser and a revolver, you don't arm them the same way. So there's a procedure for that, okay?
Well, right. You don't carry them the same way, as the chief explained, right?
Okay, and so there are two different procedures, you know. And so when you pull that weapon out and you hollering, you know, taser, taser, you have to arm it, okay? And so when you arm it, you should already know that you got your pistol out. Because you ain't arming a taser, you arming a pistol.
Lewis, did you see how fast that happened in a matter of seconds?
Thanks for the call, Lewis.
This is why I'm not a police officer guy. I would never be able to. I would not want that kind of pressure and split second decision making. Not cut out for that. She made a mistake. She reached instead of going for the right. Instead of going for the left, she reached for the right. And she made a horrible mistake.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, updating the situation at Loyola Academy in Wilmette. Why is this such a focus? Because it's a Catholic school? No, not really. It makes it interesting, but it's a focus right now for us because you have pushback against the purge coming from parents.
Well, yeah, and rich donors too, right? That
yes.
Donate tens of thousands of dollars to Loyola Academy. You said, not so fast.
Yeah, probably significantly more than that. And okay. And perhaps this is a model. Perhaps this is a model for other families and other schools and school districts and any other institution, because it's not limited to schools. This is a way that you push back against the anti-intellectual set, against the Jacobins, the cowards, and the p-hats. You don't have to defer to cultural Marxism in your midst. Letter I referenced yesterday from a major domo donor at Loyola Academy, it was, and I didn't say his name yesterday, but I sort of got clearance to say it today. And it's important because I'm very critical of the cowardice that you see emanating from C-suites, corporate titans. And I will continue to be, because that's the prevailing situation. But not here, at least not with Phil Purcell. Phil Purcell is the former CEO of Morgan Stanley, if you don't know. So, you know, he's a big wig, and he's got a lot of dough. And he has a deep relationship with Loyola, and his philanthropy is focused on advancing institutions that espouse Catholicism, teach the catechism. And the interesting thing about this letter and another letter that I understand from one of the organizers of this other parents' letter that we'll get to, there's a couple of hundred parents who have essentially signed on, although their names haven't been made public, and they should decide to make their names public. Everybody needs to be public.
Let's be all in. Let's go.
That's right. This was to the chairman of the Board of Trustees, Phil Purcell's letter. And the interesting thing about both of these letters, it's not like, oh, we want anybody fired. We're not throwing a tantrum. We don't want anybody fired. We don't want Loyola to go away. It's actually quite the opposite. We want Loyola to fulfill its original mission, of promoting Catholic instruction and building men and women now of character. That's what we want Loyola to be. It's not being that right now, and we're calling you out for not being that, or we're going to stop supporting you until you are that again. He starts his letter, does Purcell. Thank you for all you and your colleagues on the board have done to make Loyola a first-class educational institution and a force for good. Additionally, Father McGrath, president, has strengthened the spiritual life of all people he has touched. My wife and I benefited tremendously from his masses during Lent at the beginning of the COVID shelter at home period. His short, positive, hope-filled homilies were what we and many others needed spiritually. Father McGrath has been a force for good. Third, our family has 5 sons and 8 grandchildren who attended Loyola, and all have benefited, in my mind, especially compared to New Trier. Yes, and that is an appropriate New Trier shot, too. We are very sad to share that, in our opinion, Loyola in the past few years has morphed from a premier Jesuit college preparatory school to a part educational institution and part indoctrination center. One sign was the full embracing of Black Lives Matter. The early Black Lives Matter website proudly highlighted their core mission was the destruction of the nuclear family. It was very disappointing to see Loyola publicly and proudly align itself with the destruction of the nuclear family. Yeah, that does seem to run against Catholic construction, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Sounds like BLM.
BLM's website has changed that to lead its core mission, but they've told you who they are. They're not obtuse about it. And then he talked about the assignment that we talked about, which was apologize for your privilege and dividing students based on race and so on and so forth. And oh, by the way, I mean, this is a family, the Purcell family, and through his foundation that supports Cristo Rey, which has significant Latino student population, Notre Dame, 3 generations of graduates. We have supported Notre Dame for 4 generations, 3 generations of graduates, and contributed to the Purcell Pavilion, which disproportionately benefits Black scholar athletes. We will continue to do so. But what we won't do is support Loyola Academy. We will watch the actions taken by the school to stop authority figure bullying by administrators and faculty. Stop using the word bullying, but okay. We sincerely hope we can regain confidence in the school as it returns to the mission of educating students in the tradition of Catholic teaching. In the meantime, we request the McNamara Purcell Foundation gift plaque and the piazza be removed. Similarly, we request to be removed from all donor lists and all future financial support solicitations from the school. Phil Purcell. That sent reverberations through the Loyola ecosystem because of Purcell's, you know, heft financially and his track record of charitable giving. And other parents are stepping up, too. I don't want to make this all about money, because it's not all about money. But that's part of it. And this is the way you get people's attention who are otherwise willing to self-immolate ethically, spiritually, and even but not financially. In every other way but financially. This 8-page letter that was put together, was sent to me yesterday. This is really interesting. Again, I just want to start at the end of the letter, where the people, some of the comments from people who are supporters of this, the contents of this letter, you know, signatories that have not been disclosed. The only reason we live here is because my husband, an alum, wanted to make sure our kids could go to Loyola. Many teachers are doing an exemplary job in the classroom. I have heard this firsthand during the last year of Zoom school. Standouts include Mrs. Wick and Mr. Osowski. We don't want to see Loyola fail in its mission. The best thing Loyola can do right now is get back to fundamentals, teach Catholic theology, teach in accord with Jesuit tradition. That's what this group is promoting, lest you suggest that they're, or it be, you know, mischaracterized as, oh, these are hate mongers, or they're opposed to diversity, whatever the hell that means, and so on and so forth. No, absolutely not. People that want what they paid for. They want what Loyola advertises itself to be, but is not at present. And why can't you do that? You, your parent groups, you, your colleagues, again, this is not limited to schools. Pick an institution, any institution. Pick a sector, any sector. Why can't you, in your life, do the same thing that these Loyola parents are doing? You absolutely can. Now, it's a little bit different when you're insulated from accountability because you're funded by the state and all you have to do is respond to the ruling elites. You don't have to respond to parents, families, students. So the government school system is a little bit more difficult, I admit, but it's not impossible. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are very comfortable when they're insulated from criticism and very uncomfortable when that insulation is removed. And that includes in the public sector, too. They're just not receiving pushback because, I don't know, I guess they've convinced most parents that there's nothing the parent can do. Well, you can call out people the same way they're being called out here. There's a lot of schools with a lot of graduates, people that have relationships with the schools, that have platforms, that have resources, that have organizational capacity that can bring pressure. I mean, when there were these trigger laws passed in Compton, passed in California and was used in Compton, that if enough parents got together, you could force an administration change in the school. If the school was performing at such a level, parents got together, they say, we want a leadership change in the school. There were thresholds. You could do that. And actually it happened. And so these are lower income families in Compton, California, disproportionately black. They forced a change too when there was a law that provided an avenue for them to force that change. And so I just think this is such an interesting story, because without this sort of pushback, you will have every institution torn apart by this push for resegregation of America. I mean, it's just the most remarkable thing.
Yeah, and critical race theory really teaches kids to hate this country and each other. And I don't know why we're doing this, especially at this point in time with the pandemic and people feeling isolated. We need to come together and support each other. And that is not happening at government-run schools or at private schools or at Catholic schools.
Well, here, to that point, Californians for Equal Rights Foundation, along with its five partner organizations, filed a formal discrimination and civil rights violation complaint the end of last week against the San Diego Unified School District regarding unlawful discriminatory critical race training of teachers and employees, which then, of course, is turned right back on the kids in the classroom. So there's organizations that are providing air support for parents in public schools, too, like San Diego. Remember, this is the same school district that was doing in-person teaching for children in this country illegally.
Right.
And Zoom for the taxpaying American families that are part. I mean, this is.
And they're safer with the American kids and then the kids that are here illegally because they haven't been vaccinated or tested or whatever. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to use this sort of tired, silent majority argument because I'm not necessarily certain it's a majority anymore in so many respects. But in some places it is. Loyola Academy's community is one of them. And, you know, it's interesting. It shows when you have this brawl going on a civil, intellectual level and an organizational level. It highlights a few things, doesn't it? It highlights actually how few people are willing to take a stand on either side. But if enough people take a stand against those who are having their run of the place, then you can push them back. It's not so far gone in some places that they are the hierarchy such as it is, the power structure such as it is completely insulated from pressure, from arguments, from their constituents, from their clients, from the community. It's not so far gone in some places. Don in McHenry, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Dan, you've often lamented that very few bold parents, but there's some bold students out there. And I work for an organization that supports Christian students who share their faith on campus. And I just want to say there are a lot of incredibly bold students out there fighting an uphill battle in their public schools to share their faith and share their beliefs and stand firm in it. And again, to your point, in many cases, much more bold than the parents. And I just think if the more we can do to support them, because they have the greatest opportunity actually to make an impact on what we would consider the grassroots level, which is right in their public schools, or in this case, in a private school. So I just say, let's just support the students are working hard to combat all of this cultural muck on campuses as well.
Yeah, good point. Thanks for the call, Don. Yeah, I mean, we could very well be in a position, largely as we've seen actually through the pandemic, where the children will lead us, or...
Oh, boy. These kids are not leading us.
Or there's going to be a void. Well, we've seen it, though. Yeah. We've seen the Deegan kid in Naperville 203. Yeah. We've seen that girl down in Vandalia with her project on masks.
Oh, No Mask Monday?
Yeah.
Yes, I love that girl.
So we actually have seen that. We have seen kids stepping up, and it's fine, and maybe... You know, it would shame some parents for not stepping up. You can't have an argument anymore?
No.
You can't say, wait a second, this doesn't make any sense. Wait a second, how is this consistent with who you say you are, or what this institution says its mission is? You can't do that? Of course you can do that. In fact, you better do it. James in Orland Park.
Good morning.
Morning.
I was on with you guys, I don't know, maybe a month or two ago in January, and I moved from south suburbs of Orland Park down here to Florida.
Nice.
That's probably why I sound a little more calm. Myself and, I don't know, police officers from all over are down here. And we were discussing the other day how the changes down here with this governor between the schools that have been open all year, all these kids are actually learning something down here. And by the way, he gave the police down here all a $1,000 bonus. I know that's hypocritical and a terrible thing to do in this time. But
no, it's not.
I was listening to you guys this morning about mass incarceration. What Senator Dan, I don't know who you were referring to, but they have started that in Chicago. One of the reasons I left.
Mass decarceration, you mean?
Yeah, right. That's what I meant.
Right.
And they have wanted to close our juvenile jail up there at 11th and Hamilton, which they came pretty close. When I was working there, the jail had 11,000 people in it. Now it has 5. Who do you think are committing those crimes up there? Carjacking, robbery, et cetera, et cetera. So it is working up there, apparently. If that's what they want, they're going to get. I'm just glad that I'm down here. I feel sorry for you people, but... I was at the pool the other day with 7 other police officers, one from New York, one from New Jersey, one from Baltimore County, and we're all just sitting here shaking our heads, what's going on in this country? And we're all thanking God that we got a governor down here like this that's working so effectively. I know people up north might not believe that, but he's very successful down here and doing an incredible job. Yeah. You guys have a great day in Chicago. Be careful. And we'll be praying for you down here.
Well, thanks for the call, James.
You.
Appreciate it.
That's what we need, prayers right now.
Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, we left off last hour talking about Loyola Academy, and we had a call from one of our friends up in McHenry County talking about the students, young people leading the way and pushing back against this indoctrination that is afoot, the cultural Marxism indoctrination, you know, let's be specific about the nature of it, the identitarian the race hustle or the race hustler pushing back against these individuals that have created a nice cottage industry for themselves, but at the expense of the social fabric of the country. Is that fair? Here's another example. In a public school setting, secular in nature, from San Marcos High School in California.
Ugh, I wanted to punch that lady in the face.
This is one of our teacher heroes.
Yeah, heroes.
her name is Alyssa Pirro. And here's what she had to say on a Zoom call. Or, yeah, Zoom class, I guess you say. Let's do the student first, actually.
Yes,
let's
hear
from Jace Jonas first, and then we'll get to Alyssa Pirro, his teacher. So this is a good example of not getting beat up in a back alley and not being afraid to let thugs do what they're going to do so that you can bring them into the light of day. So there was all this talk of diversity and student groups organized by race. And so Jace Jonas essentially pushed back and said, well, then are we going to have a white student union? He disagreed with having race-based student groups. And so he lodged an objection, at which point the good teacher rebuked him. And this is how it transpired after he was rebuked, as he describes on Fox News with his dad.
Dr. Pirro, my English 11 teacher, then paused the weekly announcements and shouted GD or gossip, and it was a whole word. And I got, choice word, berated for a small while, or quite a while. She said things along the lines of, we don't need a white student union. You have everything. She said stuff like, as a white male, it is your duty to look out for the push down minorities and stuff along those lines. She even said stuff like, you moron, to her student.
To you.
Me, her student, which I feel isn't the most teacherly of someone. No, this is
an isolated
event. She's okay. Like her and I have a rather all right relationship, though. For that one moment in time, something happened. She got really loud, raised her voice, shouted, said these things, and it was kind of off-putting. So I have three classes. All three of them are A. So, I have good grades. After this event, my English grade went from an A to a B. Uh-huh. And when we brought that to the attention of Dr. Pirro, she said, oh, there must have been some system grading error, although I feel that wasn't truthful.
So let me ask you a question. And Dad felt that wasn't truthful either. It never happened to him before. The timing was a bit curious, but that's going to get remedied. Let me ask you a question. Would you rather insulate Jace from that experience? Or is it better that he had the experience? Not only for the student, but for the family in general. I mean, in other words, is it better to defer to the teacher to avoid the prospect of having his grade be lowered?
Oh, I'm glad he had the experience.
Or is it better, right, is it better for it to play out, however it plays out, because you stood for what is right and proper and also what you believe is right and proper. You had a full airing out of the matter, which is the right approach, because that seems to me a question that has an obvious answer, but it doesn't have an obvious answer because we don't see stories like Jace Jones and his dad very often these days.
No,
so the answer is not obvious
to
me. So the answer is deference. I mean, you can't say, I know what the right answer is, but I'm not going to do it. Or at least you have to say that. You have to say, I'm a coward. You have to say, I'm not going to do what is right because it's better to insulate from the downside than it is to fight through that sort of ignorance so that we set the record straight for not only my kid, but everybody at that particular school. and with that particular teacher. How about that? Which is the right and proper approach? I don't know anymore. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line.
Well, what are we going to do here in Chicago? Did you see the latest demands from CTU? With cases increasing, Dan, are you ready for this? They want kids that are eligible, students that are eligible, 16 and older, and their families must be vaccinated. So now the CTU is telling parents what to do with their bodies. What about my body, my choice? This is sickening because they said if their demands are not met by tomorrow, they're going to tell teachers not to go to work. And this is the third time that they've made such a threat since the 2019 strike. I mean, these guys are extortionists. They are out of their minds. And you, the irony, too, though, Dan, is that they won't tell CPS what teachers have been vaccinated because they feel like that's none of their business.
Right.
I mean, and here's Jesse Sharkey. He's so scared.
We're asking for some basic safeguards and some reassurances that we're not walking, that we're not pouring gasoline onto a fire.
Okay. So now they want big schools like Taft and Lane Tech to go to school just one day a week instead of two because it's too dangerous. Too many people might become. 34% want in-person learning that are returning if it happens. 43% of CPS high school students are going to stay at home. And 19%, Dan, 19, almost 20%. No response. They can't find them.
Yeah, of course.
20% of 103,000 kids.
It's a rounding
they can't
error.
Find.
It's a rounding error for the central planners. Chicagoans and CPS, I mean, this is what I'm talking about. This is what I'm talking about in the context of Loyola, in the context of that Jace Jonas kid in San Marcos. CPS parents... Do you live in another galaxy? Does anybody in Chicago ever pick their head up and look around the rest of the country or even the Western world when it comes to K-12 education and what's been going on for the last year in most places?
Zero reports in Europe, in the Eastern Bloc, and in the United States. Zero reports of student-to-teacher transmission.
I don't understand what exactly the position is of the parents and CPS.
They don't care. They're going along to get along. And if you say something, like, I have a sign in my yard that says, get kids back to school Monday through Friday. And I'm a racist now. But I guess I was a racist before because I voted for Trump. One of my neighbors is like, well, that's just so racist. You don't care. Like, I don't care. You don't care. Why is it acceptable to have our kids living in the basement or in their bedrooms, which a lot have been doing, for more than a year? It was supposed to be 14 days. And I know I keep banging this drum, but there's no fight, Dan. And I don't know. They're so afraid of retaliation from the union. And I'm not afraid of them. I mean, they're trying to get me fired where my other job is a coach, the union. They put up these fake Twitter people to bash me any chance that they can. I don't care.
12% enrollment drop in New York City. 12% enrollment drop in New York City public schools. Kindergartners abandoning public schools in fall 2021. That's the good news. Kindergarten applications for fall 2021 down 12% over last year, having dropped 9% the year before. So just as CPS has been cut by a third, probably a little bit more, probably closer to half over the last, say, two generations.
Right.
The same thing is going to start happening in these government schools. The sadness is that the people that have the least choice are stuck, and those are disproportionately low income, disproportionately minority, and, of course, disproportionately the constituency of the lockdowners and the Jesse Sharkies and the mayor triple threats and the governor jelly bellies. I just don't know what it takes. I guess if you are a champagne socialist, whether you're a CPS teacher, administrator, or, you know, one of the handful of white CPS families like in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I guess if you just run around saying everything's racist and I'm just going to throw in with the identitarians to cover my ass and say everything's racist and after we keep the schools closed forever and wear a mask forever, we'll go after all of our racist infrastructure with Mayor Pete. I guess if you just force everything through a racial prism and say anybody who disagrees with the identitarian overlords is racist, I guess that's how you want to content yourself in this life. But you're going to live in a dumpster fire of a neighborhood, community, state.
I mean, think about this, folks. We put teachers in front of elderly people to get vaccinated, and they're still not back at school. And again, I mean, the most outrageous example of union obstruction is advising members not to tell the district whether they've gotten a shot, but now they want all of our kids to be vaccinated and their family members to be vaccinated. So they're just kicking the can down the road. They're just coming up with excuses. That's why they're extortionists.
There's an op-ed in Time from the CEO of a K-12 concern, but he's a former superintendent of the schools in Camden, New Jersey, member of the Massachusetts Board of Elementary and Secondary Education. And, I mean, the headline is the story. Blue states are failing their students by not reopening schools. Hey, here's how they got it so wrong.
There you go. Tweet that out, and I'll retweet that. I'd love to read that.
Well, right, but this is not, I mean, I feel like this is our version of wash your hands and social distance. We say this and provide all of the evidentiary backup for a year, and there's just no give. Safely reopening schools became a debate about Trumpism itself when it should have been about meeting in the messy middle to discuss solutions and their related trade-offs. Oh, gosh, trade-offs.
Yeah.
We live in a world of trade-offs. This just in. The problem is we don't live in a world of adults. And that is most pronounced in places like Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, here's the other problem. Or I may, it's not... it's really a manifestation of the problem I just described. Going back to San Marcos, here's how this Alyssa Pirro.
Never again. Never.
Every
ever
single
again.
Teacher is a hero.
Never again. I will never call a teacher a hero ever again.
Here's how. I mean, you know, some are great teachers. Distinctions, but I'm not.
I have educators in my family. My sisters are both teachers, and they're excellent at their jobs. But they're not heroes, and I'm not a hero for going into CPS to coach. As one of the kids told me, I'm like, oh, my God. And my niece isn't a hero because she's a greeter at Jules.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
I mean, come on. Get a grip.
Well, this isn't... That's another good example of lack of adults. You don't categorize people based on their profession. You categorize them based on their performance.
Okay.
Performance, not professional affiliation. Work product matters. Make a sign. Make a placard. So going back to this hero, San Marcos High School, Alyssa... Pirro. So here's the end of her rant against Jace Jonas, who you heard from a couple of minutes ago, about his, you know, white student union using that to push back against racial segregation in San Marcos High School with the student groups. And then but the more important point for our purposes of lack of adults, because you get away with this sort of attitude. Listen to what she says about parents.
We need all
you don't need
equality.
A white student union, Jake. Oh. You get everything.
Your parent wants to talk to me about their profession and their opinion on their profession. I would love to hear that. I know very little about anything else in the world other than education, okay? However, if your parent wants to come talk to me about how I'm not doing a good enough job in distance learning based on what you need as an individual, just dare them to come at me. Because I'm so sick to my stomach of parents trying to tell educators how to do their job.
Oh,
I have never once gone to a doctor's appointment and tried to tell my medical health provider how to treat me. You know why? Because I know nothing about that. I didn't get my degree in medicine. I am going off. I'm sorry.
Well, our taxes don't pay your doctor's salary. Our taxes pay your salaries, Missy.
I dare them to come at me. Mm-hmm. I mean, and what is going to be the response of San Marcos parents other than Jace Jonas's dad? I have no idea. But that is the attitude in CPS. That is in the attitude in the New York public school system, in L.A., in all most of these government school systems, even a lot of those suburban ones that are supposed to be so good and that are not so good. Come at me.
Alyssa Pirro is her name. Yes.
But you have those teachers, those sorts of teachers. I'm not saying they're the majority, but you have those teachers with that attitude everywhere.
Yeah.
And when they say, come at me, what do you do? That's what I want to know. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. We'll take some of your calls on the topic after this break. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Their call for unity is a joke.
News.
Important question is not whether you're right or they're right, but why we shouldn't have the right to flip the channel.
Fuels. Opinion.
We have got to stop making it a crime to be a Republican.
News. Opinion. Insight. On AM 560. The Answer. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and for the break, talking about K through 12 in the COVID / race hustling era, COVID / identitarian, I guess is a better way to put it. And this example of San Marcos High School, again, the student, Jace Jonas, who opposed the push for race-based student groups, the chastising he got from his English lit teacher over it. Apparently, he got his grade lowered, and now they're fighting back against that. And so the question is, Jace Jonas, better off for the experience, or he should have just kept his mouth shut and let the unhinged race hustler, his English lit teacher, have her way? He should stay silent, and so should you, the parent. Again, here's the hero teacher, Alyssa Pirro, San Marcos High School, the end of her diatribe in the direction of Jace Jonas, and then a message she has for her students about their parents.
We need all racial equality.
You need a white student union, Jace.
Oh.
You get everything.
If your parent wants to talk to me about their profession and their opinion on their profession, I would love to hear that. I know very little about anything else in the world other than education, okay? However, if your parent wants to come talk to me about how I'm not doing a good enough job in distance learning based on what you need as an individual, just dare them to come at me. Because I'm so sick to my stomach of parents trying to tell educators how to do their job. I have never once gone to a doctor's appointment and tried to tell my medical health provider how to treat me. You know why? Because I know nothing about that. I didn't get my degree in medicine. I am going off. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Go off. So, step off. Oh, I'd love to confront that woman.
Come at me. And you would say, don't come at her. Jace should be quiet, and so should the parents, because you don't want to ruffle any feathers. You don't want to jeopardize young Jace's grades. Don't want any blemish on the young man's record. Thanks. Right? Yeah. You can't stand up when a modern-day John Dewey, like hero teacher Alyssa Pirro, says, come at me. I know stuff about education because I got a degree in education. Oh, that's... that's QED there, isn't it? That's the end of the argument.
Thank God that the superintendent placed her on administrative leave pending an investigation. Hmm. They should flat out fire her right now.
Everybody stay silent, or Jace Jonas has done the San Marcos High School community a solid?
He has done them a solid. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
John on the South Side.
He's my hero.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. I think this kid should have went along to get along. It was an English lit class, not an ethics class or not a philosophy class. The teacher's telling him to do something, just do it, and he'll know better later in life. That's not how he wants to live or how he wants to treat other people or how he wants to do other things. He's a straight-A student, so apparently he wants to do something with his life. So maybe when he becomes the owner of a business or something, he'll know how not to treat his employees, and he'll treat them accordingly.
I'm sorry. He treated the teacher inappropriately by pushing back against where she's rattling off race-based student groups. He said, well, what about a white student union, to make the point of his opposition to student unions? What does that have to do with English literature? So she's allowed to have the field to herself, and he can't make a point about these student groups? That's treating the teacher inappropriately?
I think he should have just kept his mouth shut and do what he's supposed to do, which is do what the teacher tells him to do.
He was more of an adult than she was.
Do what the teacher tells
him. In the end, he wound up being a bigger adult, Amy, and that he didn't get down in the grass and fight with a dog. I mean, when you try to argue with somebody like this, you look like the bigger fool trying to argue with him. With that teacher, not you guys, the teacher.
Right. I disagree.
Well, thanks for the call, John. I mean, that's what I'm saying. That's a baffling position to me. So don't disagree with the people in charge. The people in charge are 90% of a particular ideological disposition and a particular political agenda that has now been animated in exponentially more so than the run-up to this point in time in American history. And you're just to sit idly by and do what you're told? I don't think he's being obstreperous when he pushes back. By the way, he wasn't being told to do anything specifically. She's just holding court about race-based student groups, and so he raises the issue to highlight the absurdity. And she goes off, and then she has a message for the parents as well. Jace, you shut up. Parents, you shut up too. And the response is, okay?
Mm-mm. That's what's wrong with America right now. Everybody's just bending over and taking it. Nobody's pushing back. And I thought the kid was very respectful to the teacher, considering what she was asking him to do. So,
Marty in Naperville.
Good morning. Great show. A couple things. First of all, with that last guy's comment, yeah, she's an English lit teacher. What does she know about any student unions or anything? Whatever. Second thing, real quick, you really want to get somebody irritated, just tell them, you were a teacher. You went to college, you took some courses, and you got a license to do what you do. That's what a beautician does also. And the third thing, I got two words for the Chicago Teachers Union, and it'll solve it all. How much? How much?
Yeah, thanks for the call, Marty. You never get a straight number. I mean, actually, Jesse Sharkey does give straight numbers because we've had him on the show before, and I pressed him. I think it was in advance of last strike, and it was something, something like $2 billion or something reasonable. Okay. Sure.
Sure.
I mean, okay, fine.
Oh, and they part of their, real quick, too, they want testing done in school. Because, I really love every day I go to school, I get a janitor acting as a nurse, taking temperatures and filling out house screeners. It's a joke. And they want to do it during school hours. Test our kids. And I said, touching my children.
Yeah. The problem with these negotiations is, whatever the number is, whatever the working conditions are, there's never, now you relinquish all future claims. We're done. Never done.
No.
Because it's an extortion racket. And you're never done when you capitulate to extortionists. And that's Illinois' political culture. Kleptocrats and extortionists. And whoever can't get out is left in the center to be gutted by both sides.
And when it's all said and done, Dan, we're fighting just to have 12 days of in-person learning. 2 days a week. And this school year, we don't have much time, 9 weeks left. I mean, it's unbelievable to me.
Boy, that school year flew
by. Didn't that go by? We're fighting for 12 days. And if you go to Taft or Lane Tech, you're looking at 6 days. Mm. And they won't budge on that? So you think that this isn't going to bleed into next year? My God, if you guys can get out, please get out. I've tried.
Chris and Carrie, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, guys. I almost always call in when we talk about schools and everything like that because it's such a hot-button topic in our household with my wife as a teacher. Now, she came from the private sector, changed careers, so she can't believe the schools and the reaction of the administration almost on a daily basis. But before I get to my original point, if that teacher was a good teacher, she would learn how to differentiate with
the students and their learning and be able to receive the feedback in a positive way from those parents and use that information that they give to her and be able to differentiate for those students. But anyway, my wife,
So in both instances, with respect to the student, with respect to parents as general, right? You understand they are beyond reproach. They are not to be questioned. They do not have to make arguments. They issue diktats. You comply and say thank you or say nothing at all. But you certainly don't question. That's the amazing place we're in. And people dutifully go along without question, without thought. There are not, the synapses have been turned off. It's remarkable. All right, Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, well, again, my wife welcomes the feedback from the parents. She uses that information that they give to her to better understand and teach them. Anyway, she received a memo at her school last week on the rules of using playground equipment. So a student, the kids must sanitize their hands before they go out for recess. If they want to use a basketball, they can use a basketball, but only one person can use it. And you have to wear a mask while using it.
that's going to be a fun game. It's tough to play organized sports when only one person can touch the ball.
They don't let them play tag.
Well, listen, so you can use a soccer ball. Two people can share that, but it must never be touched. And you can only while you're using this equipment, you have to wear a mask. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, almost from the beginning of this thing, they have said that it doesn't live on surfaces. So if they're afraid of the kid breathing on the basketball and then sharing it with another kid, it's madness. It's absolute madness.
Oh, it makes me sick to my stomach. They can't play volleyball. They can't play foursquare. They can't play tag. They have to stand outside in their squares. It looks like a communist country, guys. Drive by a Chicago public school middle school and you'll see.
Yeah, but here, okay, thanks
dutifully
for the call,
standing
Chris.
There.
But where are the parents?
I don't know.
So I'm not talking about, I'm talking about generally.
Right.
I mean, yes, we've known that for a year about surfaces. CDC just issued another study. Each contact with a contaminated surface has less than a 1 in 10,000 chance of causing an infection. That's even soft pedaling it. Lindsay Marr, airborne viruses expert, Virginia Tech. New York Times reporting on the study. Airborne viruses expert from VTech. We've known this for a long time, and yet people are still focusing so much on surface cleaning. There's really no evidence that anyone has ever gotten COVID-19 by touching a contaminated surface. But out of an abundance of caution, only you can play, you can shoot hoops by yourself, you can't play organized sports. Out of an abundance of caution, no evidence anyone ever. And yet, where are the parents, or frankly, the students? I don't know. They can read this stuff as well as I can, some of them at least, to say, this school is out of their minds. You are not following the science. You are saying you're following the science, and you're not following the science. You're a fraud. This is a fraud, and I'm not going to participate in a fraud.
And the fraud about the 6 feet, now it's 3 feet. New York schools went back yesterday to 3 feet separation. It's a fraud, too. It all is. We're being bamboozled, folks. Wake up.
Ken in Plainfield.
Yeah, you've covered so much since this original question, but I've always, as a student myself, and when my kids were students, taught them to stick up for themselves, and I've stuck up for myself. And I've done that throughout life. And that's why we're at where we're at in this country, because nobody else does that. I mean, I've lost a lot of friendships, or not made friendships, but you have to stand up for yourself and stand up for what's right, or you end up like we are now.
Thanks, Ken. Kyle in Woodridge.
Well, two comments. One, Sean said yesterday, you only compromise with those you love. You never compromise with tyrants because you only lose freedom. So in reference to the school and, just sit down, shut up, and listen to what they have to say, That's what has gotten our back against the wall. And two, in terms of living in these sterile environments like ERs, George Carlin made a joke on it a long time ago about you live like that and you know, you go outside and you get a cold, and it's going to end up putting you down because you no longer have an immune system. But nonetheless, you guys have a great day.
Thanks, Kyle. Joe in Franklin Park.
You know, I don't know why everybody's getting so upset about this teacher. I mean, it's not like she dressed up like a Southern Belle or said White Lives Matter or had like a teenage girl, you know, doing a text that's a little off color. I mean, if she did something like that, then this woke left would have really canceled her. So you guys need to lay off of her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Thanks for the call,
Joe. What you did there.
Look forward to her on a forthcoming season of The Bachelor. Mark in Plainfield.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I have an ex-friend who's a teacher in the Chicago suburbs, and we'd argue about education, and he thought his Trump line was, you don't know what it's like on the other side of the desk. And okay. I go, I'd love to see you try that at a PTA meeting and let's see how long it takes the soccer moms to run you out of the school district.
Thanks for the call, Mark. Well, I mean, it's those pee hats, those sentimental barbarians that are ruling the roost, and they have also dominate the teaching profession, which is why, I mean, there's a reason why this Jace Jonas story made it to Fox News, because it's common or because it's uncommon?
Because it's uncommon.
Right. And so this is so... So what does that tell you about where we're at? That story, a guy pushing back against his teacher respectfully and just saying, I don't agree with this. And yes, because you've got audio, video of it, it makes it a little bit more salacious. But it's that interplay and then her message to parents and the lack of response from parents other than Jace Jonas's dad. That's why it's a story. That's why it's a national story. That's why Fox News picked it up, because we're searching for stories like this, and they're difficult to come by. Mike in Milwaukee.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I'm a teacher up here. I was going to say, I feel like she just missed it out of the rookie playbook of just planning for, I mean, what a kid would say back to a race-based grouping. I feel like it'd just be really obvious that a kid would come back and say, oh, we should have a white student meeting. She should have had a response for that. But I feel like she kind of just tried to save face.
Yeah, right. No, thanks for the call. The other thing, too, if I was Jonas, the other thing, it would have been fun if he continued on, but rather than just letting her screech at him, but just say, well, wait a second. She told him, you know, you have to be looking out for minorities. As a white man, you have to look out for minorities that are essentially oppressed. And I would have said to her, well, teach, I'm a little confused. On the one hand, you say I'm an oppressor. On the other hand, you say my job is to look out for the oppressed. I can't do both, can I?
Right. Why do these teachers think that white kids don't have problems, too? And that, you know, they're not all rich and have wonderful lives.
Tom in Blue Island.
Dan and Amy, good morning. I don't want to take a run at John, who was the original caller directly. We're supposed to defer to these teachers. When Dan, I'm a year or two older than you. When we were young, you looked up to your teachers. You admired them, and you had respect for them, for the people they were. I was an English major in college. That's why I'm a roofer now. And I have a good education. I have a good vocabulary, and I've read a lot of the classics. You're telling me I'm supposed to walk around like I'm a god to be unquestioned? That was an amazing – John's phone call again, and not he ain't Tom from Deer Park, so I'm not looking to take run at him like crazy. But we're to defer to these people? That's insanity. It's really insane. This is what we're living in?
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, Tom. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Their call for unity is a joke.
News.
Important question is not whether you're right or they're right, but why we shouldn't have the right to flip the channel.
Fuels. Opinion.
We have got to stop making it a crime to be a Republican.
News. Opinion. Insight. On AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So as has been reported by Mike Scott, the Centers for Disease Control, or the Centers for Control, and the FDA investigating clots, blood clots, in six women in the days after getting the J&J vaccination. in combination with reduced platelet counts. More than 7 million doses of J&J have been administered.
Oh, boy. This is a concern.
They're recommending a pause in the administration of the single dose until the process is complete, the meeting of the CDC's advisory committee on immunization practices to discuss the cases. The FDA has launched an investigation. Until that process is complete, says Dr. Ann Schuchat, who we've talked to before, principal deputy director of the CDC, we are recommending a pause in the use of this vaccine out of an abundance of caution. Oh, there's that phrase again.
Well, this is a problem because Johnson & Johnson vaccine is supposed to be given out at the United Center in 2 days with walk-up appointments. They're going to shift from Pfizer to J&J, but now that's all up in the air.
Well, why should I believe the CDC on this any more than I believe them on so much else since they've become so politicized? Why should I and I'm sorry, and what is the standard by which you move to call for a pause, that you investigate adverse outcomes from the vaccinations? Because we've talked about it. There's been reports. They have this VAERS system of reporting adverse events associated with vaccinations. And there's been anaphylaxis, incidents of anaphylaxis. Why the Pfizer and Moderna with adverse outcomes that are associated with those vaccinations in some people?
Mostly women, too. It's weird.
Well, this is, yeah. Well, but I mean, I want to understand standards here because everything has become so arbitrary. So is there some standard here that's bright line that we can rely on, that we can understand, that provides the basis for the decision making? Because if there's not, I guess I'm going to stick with what I understand to be true from the clinical trials about the J&J vaccine, just like the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined again by Dr. Reed Spaulding, who is a practicing pathologist. Reed Spaulding is a practicing pathologist and contributed to the American Spectator. That's the other thing I forgot. All opinions expressed are his and not those of his employer. And just out of an abundance of caution, I also want to say no animals will be harmed in the production of this segment.
Oh, thank you.
Dr. Spaulding, good to have you back. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
So what about this pause, this J&J vaccination pause and the basis for it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of learning about this morning just like everybody else is. I think, like you said, you know, they've given out 7 million doses of this, and they've got 6 reports of this type of clot, which, I mean, it is very, very rare and very serious. But I don't think people need to freak out yet. I think that if they have, you know, good reason to think that it was the vaccine that caused these clots, then certainly it makes sense to pull back for a couple of days and look into it. But we're talking about a really low number, as it's reported, at least. So you know, we'll see what happens as we investigate it, I guess.
Well, is the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, are those safe?
Yeah. So the deal is, you know, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine used a similar type of technology that the AstraZeneca one did, and it also was associated with clotting, again, in very small numbers of people. They thought maybe it was associated with clotting, but the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccine, they use a different technology that hasn't, at least to this point, shown anything like this. So, I stick with, you know, the results from the clinical trials that show they were safe and effective. I mean, I think millions of us have gotten them at this point, and, you know, is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, look, at this is coming from many of the same people who are saying things that are specious about mask wearing, and have just finally come to the conclusion or restated their conclusion from a year ago that surface transmission is virtually non-existent. I mean, why should anybody be whipped into a panic about, frankly, anything they say?
Right. Well, why should anybody have been whipped into a panic about any of this from day one?
Right.
Is the real question. But you're right. It's kind of the boy who cried wolf at this point. I don't know. Or, I mean, it's not me personally, but people in general don't know when the CDC director gets on, you know, TV and says there's an impending sense of doom, like she did a couple of weeks ago. They don't know if they should really feel doom, or should they really feel doom, or should they, you know, kind of take it with a grain of salt, because the messaging has been a little scattered and not consistent. And as far as this specific issue goes, I mean, it sounds like today you can't get the vaccine if you're supposed to, so I'd make different plans, maybe get one of the other ones. But hopefully they'll investigate this and come up with, you know, an actual reason for why these 1 in a million people that got it had this side effect. I mean, maybe they're on a certain type of medication, or even a certain herbal over-the-counter thing. I mean, who knows, you know? I mean, mm-hmm. Who knows?
Maybe they have a, you know, situation that they don't even know about. But so the
exactly,
CDC, and the CDC director, I mean, she was crying come Easter time, like, please don't go out. I mean, she's got to get a grip, don't you think?
Yeah, I didn't. Again, I try to reserve judgment, because I realize these people are in very, you know, stressful situations, and I do try to give them the benefit of the doubt. But I did think that was a bit unprofessional to, you know, because she's not just a pundit talking about things, right? I mean, she says something and people literally take it as the government's voice of what we should be doing and what we should be, how we should be acting. And I don't think anybody should be feeling an impending sense of doom. I mean, the impending sense of doom was this time last year, where we all didn't really know for sure exactly how this was going to shake out, what was going to happen. Now we're in a much better position, a position far from doom, a position where, you know, we are going towards herd immunity pretty quickly, and our death counts are down. And the case numbers are relatively stable. They've gone up just a little bit in the past month because of some of these variants that are flared up. We knew that would happen. Every virus mutates. This is, you know, this, none of this is unpredicted. So to couch it all as feeling doom isn't really. I don't feel doomful. I don't know. But that's.
I want to get to the impending sense of doom I have about vaccine passports. But before that, I want you to adjudicate this disagreement between Texas Governor Greg Abbott and President Biden about, you know, having a full house at opening day for the Texas Rangers. And Greg Abbott was on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace this past Sunday, a couple days ago, and he had this to say about where Texas is at.
We absolutely are not declaring victory at this time. We remain very vigilant and guarded and proactive in our response, but there's simple math behind the reason why we still continue to have success. Yesterday, we had the second lowest number of hospitalizations in 10 months. We have the fourth lowest positivity rate in a year and the highest number of vaccinations ever administered, exceeding now 14 million.
And briefly, why is that, sir?
It's because when you add all the number of vaccinations that have taken place, as well as all of the acquired immunity from all of the Texans who have been exposed and recovered from COVID-19, it means very simply it's a whole lot more difficult for COVID-19 to be spreading to other people in the state of Texas. And I got to add this real quick, Chris, and that is we did an excellent job of vaccinating our senior population that's most vulnerable to getting COVID-19.
And thus, not much evidence that, you know, 50,000 people showing up for a baseball game had any material impact on the pace at which herd immunity is being achieved or has been achieved in Texas.
Right. I think the governor in Texas has some really good medical professionals on his team advising him. He's exactly right. You have a situation now where you have, in that state, vaccinated most of the at-risk population. You certainly have had a year's worth of people getting this. There's a lot of, obviously, just naturally acquired immunity at this point in Texas and across the country. You put those two things together, it's becoming increasingly difficult for the virus to spread from place to place, and from person to person, rather. And the proof's a bit in the pudding, right? I mean, they opened up completely, took rid of their mask mandate and everything, what was it, 5 or 6 weeks ago. Their daily, you know, fatality rate hasn't skyrocketed. Their case numbers haven't skyrocketed. I don't know their exact numbers, but it certainly hasn't been this bad outcome. Yeah, well, yeah, I'm assuming that, but I don't want to just say that without having it right in front of me. But yeah, I mean, so it's not like there's been this catastrophic, you know, what did Biden call it, Neanderthal thinking, you know. It's
yes,
not like
Neanderthal
that,
thinking.
Nothing mm-hmm. bad has happened. Yeah, you know, I mean, so...
Let me get your take on something else, you know, because I want to be abundant in my caution. This sign outside of Lincoln Park Zoo.
Uh-oh, what?
Thank you for wearing a face covering. Lincoln Park Zoo in Chicago. Thank you for wearing a face covering. Face coverings help protect zoo guests, staff, and animals. Is human to animal COVID transmission, is that a big deal? And if it is, should we have the animals wear masks too?
You know, that's not the dumbest thing I've heard, but it's close.
Mm-hmm. I try.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get on that level.
Thank you. I appreciate that this morning. No, I'm not aware that is a significant threat to the animals. But if it were, I agree. Yes, we should definitely make, you know, the mask up. I don't know how well that would work, but you know.
Well, we've got a couple of Rona busters in Chicago that I'm sure would be happy to go into the tiger cage with the masks, no problem. I wanted to get to your piece in the Spectator about vaccine passports. There's a lot of dueling op-eds on this topic now that the Excelsior has been rolled out in New York State. You come down against vaccine passports. What's the problem? I mean, you know, we get IDs and passports to travel. This is just sort of one more thing. We just have that little notation that we got vaccinated out of an abundance of caution to be able to stop the spread and live safely. What's the issue?
Right. Well, you know, in theory, there's not necessarily an issue, but it's the practicality of it. For one, you know, these databases, I mean, who controls that? Who has access to that information? Number two, maybe even more importantly, is it's not going to be necessary. I mean, we're at a point now where we're having people, you know, receiving lots of vaccines, and we have a lot of natural immunity, and this thing is going to be under control. It's kind of a moot point, I guess, is what I'm saying. You have that combined with the concerns about privacy. You know, it's just nonsense. It's just one more thing that people are trying to make people do to keep people happy, to make people feel safe, I guess. And then the real kicker is, so specifically about the one in New York, they go on their website to say, oh, it's great, now you can go to restaurants and, you know, whatever else. But you still have to do, you know, X, Y, and Z, stay 6 feet apart and wear your mask and everything. So it's kind of like, well, why the hell do you even get vaccinated if you still have to live like you're not? It's just a little funny to me in a sick kind of way, I guess.
It doesn't make sense.
That's why you get vaccinated, you know? That's why you get vaccinated, so you can live normally, still safe.
I like a practicing pathologist with common sense and a sense of humor. He is Dr. Reed Spalding, contributor to The Spectator, practicing pathologist. All opinions expressed have been his own, not those of his employer. And again, no animals were harmed, nor did we spread COVID to any animals during this segment. No. Dr. Spalding, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you guys so much. Have a good day.
Thank you. And also, Dan, just so you know, some gorillas at the San Diego Zoo got COVID and then they got vaccinated. Before our parents probably did, which is so sad.
And then they were elected to the school board.
And Dr. Spalding joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Mike Manapkin runs the Democratic House floor for 30-plus years running. He's promising this and he's stealing that. Where can you get that kind of money? He's using your house like his own piggy bank. You ought to know by now. You can pay off your house here in Illinois, but you can never keep up with the taxes. Oh, how it's always been the plan to have a taxpayer pay, no doubt. Not a matter of if anymore, but when.
That means it's time for our weekly installment with Ted Dabrowski, president of wirepoints.org. And I think I've got an idea
what?
With respect to you know, since you can't have rational conversations with people in Chicagoland.
Right. They don't even look at you.
Ridicule via bullhorn. I'm going to retain this guy who is driving around downtown Los Gatos in California doing this to people outside walking on the sidewalk wearing masks.
Hey, guys, thanks for wearing your masks. Never question CNN or the government. Always obey authority. Thank you. We're number one. Appreciate that. Hey, guys, you're looking good. You're doing your part. Thanks for wearing your masks. But the county says two masks now, okay? Do your part. Save grandma. Hey, buddy. Hey, guys. Is your baby in a mask yet? Follow the science. Baby should be in masks, okay? Fauci says it. He says it. You should believe it. Never question authority. Never question CNN. Never question the government. You're looking good. Hey, guys. Thanks for wearing your mask and your bubble over there. You're staying safe. Looking good. Get your vaccines and your heavy metals. It's good for you, okay? The government never lies. Great. Great. Just...
Moron.
Always follow authority. You're great. Good job, buddy. 14 more years to flatten the curve.
Dr. Fauci says you have to wear two masks. Dr. Fauci says you must jump off of a tall building.
I like that.
That's what I want to do at Winnemac Park. I was there Sunday night. The only person not wearing a mask was me.
I think,
and everyone did the half moon around me like I'm some super spreader.
I want to come up with a game. See, try and make money off this. What? Like Dr. Fauci says to replace Simon Says as kids' favorite game. The bullhorner guy gave me an idea, but I like that. Maybe we'll distribute some AM560 bullhorns and encourage people to roam the streets of Chicagoland.
That's what I want to do.
Congratulating people. Looking good, staying safe.
Looking good.
Not
keeping
questioning
it tight.
Authority. Absolutely.
Keeping it real there.
For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by the aforesaid Ted Dabrowski. Ted, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
Is that about right? The gentleman in Los Gatos may have sort of stumbled into an insight. We're looking at another decade or so of mask wearing in Illinois.
Well, you never know, but I think the taking the approach he's taken might be the right one because, you know, we're not being very successful in using all the facts and figures to push back. So, you know, parody and poking fun at them might be the way to do it, just to expose how ridiculous a lot of things have become.
I completely agree. I think that's right. So then the question just becomes, which will be longer, the lack of K-12 schooling in Chicago or the mask mandate? Governor Pritzker, we talked about this a little bit earlier in the show, that CTU is threatening another walkout course.
Tomorrow, you know,
that's
yeah.
Pro forma. People need to understand that's in part thanks to Governor Spaulding there. He assigned into law a statute that repeals some of the restrictions on teachers' right to strike, so they can now strike over subjects other than wages and benefits. They can strike over schedules, remote learning, even child care subsidies. That what the Wall Street Journal gets wrong, of course, is this idea that, oh, Lightfoot is trying to save the city. She opposed that bill. She opposed that bill because she's not up for reelection first. Pritzker is, and so that's why he threw in with the teachers union. There's no good guys in this story, but it is important to note what's happening here and why you could see, I mean, I don't know how you walk out from a walkout, but a formal declaration of another strike based on than not liking their working conditions or other such things associated with their working conditions that have nothing to do with salaries and benefits.
Well, yeah, I think it's fascinating. First of all, I think what everybody should understand is that, you know, and it's this way in a lot of school districts across the state. Many of them don't want schools to reopen properly this year because if it does, then that's going to set a precedent for next year. And, you know, they want as much ambiguity for the fall, either to whatever you want to call it, to protect themselves or to continue to control the situation. But, you know, the more they give into opening up schools properly now, the harder it'll be for the unions to stop opening next year. So they got to hold ground. But, yeah, they've been given lots more power by Governor Pritzker. People won't see it because it won't make the news that much. But the unions, in theory, had some of their power taken back, you know, 20 or 30 years ago. Where they were limited in what they could strike over, but now they've given the power back to the union, and they can strike over so many things now. You know, they already struck, depending on what you call a strike these days. I would argue if they don't show up tomorrow, it's another strike. They had multiple strikes back in the 70s and 80s when they had the old law in place, and now we've put that same law back in. So expect more and more. The power's all with the teacher union and none with the parents.
They can determine the length of day, the length of the school year, how many kids are in the class. They can strike over any of that. But now the part of their demands, because you know they're extortionists, they want eligible students and their families to be vaccinated, or they won't go to school tomorrow. And this after Jesse Sharkey told members not to let CPS know whether or not they got a shot, because that was too intrusive, but yet they could tell us what to do with our bodies. And, you know, shame on you, parents. If you don't get vaccinated, if you don't get your kids vaccinated, we're not going back.
Yeah, this is the problem, too, right? So, first of all, Pritzker gave them that power right during this pandemic. He's given them the power to do what they're doing and to do it. You know, they were doing it before anyway, but now they can flaunt it because they got the law behind them. But you know, here's where the facts don't matter anymore. Here we are where we are in COVID. You've got all the teachers, you know, the majority who've wanted, or anybody who's wanted to get a vaccine by now has it. So the teachers are vaccinated. You've got, you know, well over 70% of elderly in Illinois vaccinated. I think the numbers are still behind for minorities. But you've got the elderly vaccinated. People who want to be vaccinated can be. It's opened up to everybody now. Kids don't suffer from COVID. So there's no reason not to open schools other than their own, you know, the union's own power grab and fear, or whatever you want to call it.
New York Times reporting this week the market value of office towers in Manhattan plummeted 25%, according to city projections that were released last week, contributing to an estimated $1 billion drop-off in property tax revenue. In addition to that, J.P. Morgan Chase, Ford Motor, Salesforce, Target, more big companies giving up office space, expensive office space, or downsizing. Jamie Dimon writing in a letter to shareholders, Jamie Dimon, chief executive of J.P. Morgan Chase, they're going to significantly reduce their need for real estate. For every 100 employees, he said, his bank may need seats for only 60 on average. What's the story in Chicago?
Yeah, and I haven't heard the similar numbers for that, but you've heard the similar stories where, especially you got a finance heavy, you know, kind of a heavy service industry for Chicago. So, you're going to expect very similar things on that, where companies are going to announce that they need, you know, just 80% of the space they needed, or 60% or 70%. And that's going to impact the values. It's going to impact overall property values. It's going to impact the property taxes that, either that or the property tax rates will shoot through the roof, but it's going to impact the money that there therefore is available for CPS and for other things. So it's part of the whole unwinding of Chicago. You know, it's New York City can probably hold it better than Chicago, because Chicago's got so many problems at the same time, right? It was already junk rated beforehand. CPS was already four notches in the junk. What can Chicago afford? And I think we also have to keep out on the crime these coming weeks. Not crime, but riots, because how Chicago responds to that is going to let people know whether Lightfoot's going to take serious the next round of riots or not. And all those things will impact, of course, property values, taxes, whether corporations are going to fill their buildings or not. It's a scary story. It's lined up to really, really hurt Chicago.
There's this is just a fascinating story to me. It says so much. An Illinois lawmaker is proposing to create a state income tax credit, child tax credit, as high as $600 per child. This would give a full $600 tax credit per child to single parents making $40,000 a year or less, or couples filing jointly who earn up to $60,000. You think this is a Republican pushing this tax relief? You'd be wrong. It's an openly gay, newly appointed Democrat Senator Mike Simmons, who replaced Heather Staines. He is proposing that. He is childless. The Republicans are opposing it. State Senator Don DeWitt of St. Charles said approving the tax credit wouldn't be fiscally responsible, has the wrong effect on the state budget. So the openly gay Democrat socialist is proposing tax relief for low to middle income families, and the Republican, suburban Republicans are opposing it. Is there something askew with that story, Ted?
I don't know what to say about that. It's, on the one hand, it's always confusing now because I think everybody wants their credits. You know, to some degree, everybody wants their credits. Everybody's trying to engineer everything that's going on in the finances. And so, I'm left a little baffled by it all because if you look at other things that are going on coming through the Biden bill, and other Illinois bills, they are all working to, it's going to be so hard to unwind all this if and when, our side being the reformers ever get a chance. It's going to be hard to unwind these things because there's so many, especially when you bring in the word equity in here, so many things that are going on that money's traveling across different paths. You can't figure out what the heck's going on.
Yeah, but so, it'd be different if the Republican position, we oppose carve-outs. You know, we're not going to play these manipulations with loopholes and so on and so forth. That's not their position. They're in favor of the same sort of special deals, waivers, cutouts, and so forth as Democrats. They just slightly differ. There's no principled position the Republicans taking. They're just coming out in opposition to probably one of the best things, if you're going to do carve-outs, you could actually do, which is why there's no opposition party in this state as far as I'm concerned.
Well, no, you're absolutely right about that. There is no principle. Nothing that the Republicans overall, I mean, there's a few of them that actually have pretty good principles, and I enjoy talking to them. But as a party, as a group, there is no plan. There is no clear message. There is no platform. There is no agenda. And until we hear one, I think you're right to critique. We're right to critique them as a group.
Ted Dabrowski, President, WirePoints, Inc., WirePoints.org, for great policy analysis and all things Chicagoland and Illinois policy related. Ted, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
You guys have a great day.
Thanks, you too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Former American Express CEO Harvey Golub, writing in the Wall Street Journal, politics is risky business for CEOs. And he talks of those higher profile CEOs who have made their feelings about the Georgia election reform law very public, and writes, he knows them, not surprisingly. He is deferential to them. You know, they're people of goodwill. I will not stipulate to that, but that's his view. He says, I believe they are wrong to take public positions on this law. And he thinks the law reaches a reasonable trade-off between the two objectives of making voting relatively simple and making eligibility a matter that is strictly enforced. He thinks the bill does a pretty good job of trading off of those two objectives. But he goes on to say, the reason I think CEOs should be silent on the issue isn't because I disagree with their judgment on the merits. It's because I think it's wrong for executives to take a company position on public policy questions that don't directly affect their business. And he points out that, one, they don't just represent themselves, obviously. Two, they will alienate some of their employees and customers. Three, they will be pressured in the future to comment pro or con on other states' voting laws. And four, there's no limiting principle. They'll be forced to comment on everything that is being bandied about in the political arena. And it just further divides up potentially their customer base. So it's bad business. Probably right. But I don't know that matters anymore. He's right, but they do it anyway. Why have so many CEOs, do you think, taken the position opposite former CEO, former Amex CEO Harvey Golub. Well, to explore that with us, we're pleased to be joined again by Everett Piper. He is a former president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. He's a contributing columnist to the Washington Times. And he's the author of the national bestseller, Not a Daycare, The Devastating Consequences of Abandoning Truth. Everett Piper, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate being back on the show again.
Yeah, it's great. And great that you're still in the idea arena. That's good, even though you're not at Oklahoma Wesleyan anymore. What do you think about, Harvey Golub's perspective to his colleagues that is being rejected by his colleagues? Why do you think that is?
Well, I actually cover this in my new book, Grow Up, Life Isn't Safe, But It's Good, which is released today by Regnery. I'll repeat that. Grow Up, Life Isn't Safe, But It's Good. And essentially I say this about what's going on in our cancel culture and this inappropriate, what I would call infantile reaction to the political arena. In Not a Daycare, I said, it's coming. What's taught today in the classroom is going to be practiced tomorrow in our culture. And these snowflakes that are demanding safe spaces at Berkeley and Brown are going to graduate. And tomorrow they're going to be in the corporate boardrooms, they're going to be in your courtrooms, and they're going to be in your living rooms. And they're going to start affecting public policy with the same attitude. And the attitude is, we want to be safe. We want to be comfortable. You can't confront us. You can't do anything that's difficult. And that is what's happening even in these election law controversies. Why is it controversial that somebody should have to prove their identity in order to vote legally? Well, what's fueling that is this juvenile temper tantrum of safety, of tolerance, of affirmation. And that's what's driving these stupid decisions. The solution to all this nonsense is to start teaching stuff that makes common sense. The solution is to stop teaching narcissism and maybe teach natural law. The solution is stop trying to make people feel comfortable all the time and maybe confront them with the Constitution. There is a solution, and the solution is to recognize the garbage in, garbage out. You're going to get bad culture with bad ideas, but you could get good culture if you start teaching good ideas, the ideas that have been tested by time and defended by reason and validated by experience and given to us through revelation.
But it's so condescending, too, to the black community to say, you know, you don't know where your DMV is or you can't get an ID because you're black, like they, as if they don't know how to use a computer or you know, how to take care of themselves. It's so ridiculous.
Spot on. What is more insulting to you or to me? Forget the color of our skin. What is more insulting to you or to me to suggest we're not smart enough to figure out how to get a driver's license? Mm. And by the way, 97% of the registered voters in the state of Georgia have one. They have a state-issued identification, 97%. And for the 3% that don't, this bill provides an easy, accessible, free, I'll say it one more time, free way to get it. This law is not a law that is unfair or unjust or unwise. It makes all the sense in the world. And again, I say the reason the corporate world is getting involved in this childish debate, this perpetual daycare attitude of, well, you offended us. You're making it difficult for us. We can't get a driver's license when 97% of the people out there can. The reason that these ideas are permeating culture right now is garbage in, garbage out. We taught it in our classrooms, and it's being practiced in our culture. Again, in my book, Grow Up, out today, I actually, it's a self-evident title, Grow Up. Just grow up and start acting like a mature adult. Stop looking in the mirror and worshiping yourself and start maybe looking at some bigger ideas that have been proven to actually work.
I think there is definitely some, you know, ideologically driven C-suiters. But, you know, I'm not sure that Ed Bastian is George Soros. So there's something else going on, it seems to me. Part of it is, yes, pressure from woke employees that have matriculated through K through post-secondary over the last couple of generations, too, as you describe. That's part of it. But isn't part of it that they're playing the same race hustle game as Black Lives Matter? They're just playing it on a bigger scale. They're playing it with the federal government and with state governments. And that's really where they can get their bread buttered, since so many of these Fortune 500 companies – a significant part of their business model is rent seeking. And so they align with governments, starting with the feds, which is sort of always moving left, even with Republican presidents or Republican control of Congress, just moves left slower. And so there's a very cynical but real economic incentive to play the same game that they then turn around and underwrite when it's Black Lives Matter or some other agitprop producing group.
I don't know. I don't know how to respond to that. I don't know if there's actually financial gain to be had by aligning with Black Lives Matter and critical race theory and intersectionality and these false claims of white privilege. I don't know if corporations actually gain or not by doing that. What I do know is that it is inconsistent, it is self-refuting, and it is hypocritical for them to take those positions. You're going to tell me that you care about your business, you care about your bottom line, when you're going to support an organization that goes in and destroys businesses, actually burns them to the ground,
yeah,
fights against capitalism. That makes no sense.
Well, I just so we're clear, there's been some look at this, and I know conservatives love to believe the idea that you know go woke, go broke. No, there's not evidence to support that. And one of the things is there's no cost imposed for them to do this. I mean, there really is no market feedback that's discernible, particularly for the big boys. And I think that's something to consider, which is why I've said before that the Republican Party should completely publicly disavow corporate America. I mean, if there's some CEO that wants to come along and be a free enterprise, enlightened person, then great. They're welcome, obviously. But generally speaking, who we're talking about, you know, we don't want your money. We're not, you're not our constituents. We're for working people that are aspirational, that live the founding values of this country. So go to hell, Merck and Coke and Delta Airlines. We don't want you. We don't need you. We want to make it clear to the entire American populace that it is the left champagne socialists. They are the party of big business, not the tag they try to put on us. And that's probably a pretty good political market position, too.
I think you're spot on. I agree with what you just said, because what I hear you saying is that there's a moral high ground for the conservative position. But what's happening right now is this woke agenda presents itself with some sort of moral superiority, when that is a joke. Wokeness may not make you broke, but wokeness is a joke if you're going to argue from the context that you've got the moral high ground. These people that are suggesting that somehow they've got moral high ground and pulling a baseball game out of Georgia when they continue to do business with communist China, come on, please stop it. Maybe you're making money. Maybe they're making money, but their moral high ground is on very shaky sand.
So, I know you spoke to this in terms of K through 12 education, generally speaking. But there's a good piece by John McWhorter, the linguist professor at Columbia, about these anti-racists, which is what they are. He writes of anti-racist theory, critical race theory, effectively. It's a fragile performative ideology which goes beyond the passages above, which goes on beyond the passages he referenced above, to explicitly reject linear reasoning. This is key. Explicitly reject linear reasoning, traditional legal theorizing, even Enlightenment rationalism. We are to favor an idea that an oppressed racist story, in quotes, constitutes truth in an overarching sense, apart from mere matters of empirical or individual detail. Which is why you can have people, you know, write books like, In Defense of Looting and so forth, and be, you know, treated as serious scholars by NPR. But he's describing what is, you're describing what is. The challenge, it seems to me, and maybe there's no easy solution other than remaking the curriculum at the pre-K through post-secondary education systems within those systems. How do you get people out of a position of unreason? You know, can you get people out of a position of unreason that they didn't come to, you know, by definition, they didn't come to through reason? Is reason the antidote, or is there something else?
I guess as a Christian, I have to go to the words of Christ. He said repeatedly, the truth shall set you free. There was a time where the academy stood for that. By and large, universally, the academy believed in those words, that the objectivity of truth was the only foundation for human freedom. I do think we can win this debate by pointing to the consequences, not just the logic and the reason of an idea. I would never abandon that. Stand firm on logic. Never embrace this nonsense that 2 plus 2 equals 4 is some sort of trope, which is exactly, that's a quote from a professor at Brooklyn College. 2 plus 2 equals 4 is white privilege trope. That's where we are right now. So we need to point out the consequences of these broken ideas. The broken ideas lead to broken culture. Freedom. If you want to be a free people, you've got to believe in some objective standard that guards, protects, and defines that freedom. I do think if we continue to go back to the consequences of these ideas, ask rhetorical questions like Christ did. He went, you know, the smartest guy that ever walked the face of the earth, the Word made flesh and dwelling among us, God incarnate, rarely engaged in a debate. He almost always asked a rhetorical question that exposed the lie. You know, whose face is on the coin? Why do you call me Lord? Do you want to throw the first stone? That's the way for us to win this argument. It's by pointing out the negative consequences of the lie, the broken worldview.
Do you think there's a rank order prioritization of the institutions where this sort of effort that you're describing needs to be put forth? Or is it just sort of kind of where you live, wherever you live, whatever you're involved with, start there?
Everybody listening to you on this show right now should recognize their responsibility to act like an adult, stop imbibing, enabling, and affirming this infantile attitude of us against them. I deserve mine, me, me, me. I deserve recompense. I deserve reparations. This is a very self-centered attitude. The responsibility we have is to point out the brokenness of that idea and ask a simple question like this. Do you really think we ought to start judging people by the color of their skin rather than the content of their character? And then just be quiet. Shut up. Let the opponent answer that question. Their answer is not a good one.
He is Everett Piper, author of the national bestseller Not a Daycare, The Devastating Consequences of Abandoning the Truth. He's a former president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. His new book, this is Regnery, Grow Up, Life Isn't Safe, But It's Good. Grow Up, Life Isn't Safe, But It's Good. That is out today, so you want to get Grow Up, Everett Piper's latest book. Everett Piper, thanks for joining us as always. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. You can win $12,000 towards the purchase of a new car or to cover your existing car payments just by doing acts of kindness. Learn more at 560theanswer.com/kindness.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and let's just quickly Joe Friday the facts as we understand them in the Dante Wright case in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota. One, he was pulled over, according to police, for having expired tags on his plates.
Yeah, not an air freshener dangling from his rearview mirror.
Number two, there was an outstanding warrant for unlawful possession of a gun without a permit, and for fleeing from police. So when his brother said the other day he probably didn't know he had an outstanding warrant out for himself, that seems unlikely.
Yeah, because he resisted arrest. Yeah.
The stop is two officers, junior officers to the officer ultimately that shot him, walk up on either side of the car, driver's side, passenger side. He gets out of the car. The one officer is in the process of trying to handcuff him. He starts to resist because the officer, Potter, who shot him, and who you see her body cam video is the pertinent video, she walks up and grabs Dante Wright's arm to sort of try and stabilize him for the other officer. He tries again to handcuff him. Dante Wright spins out of that, jumps in the car. They, of course, follow him, and then a bit of a tussle ensues, which is when she pulls out her gun and yells, "Taser, taser," and shoots him. And this is the relevant portion of that body cam video.
Amnesia!
then he drove away in the car, only to crash a few blocks away. But, yeah, she just yelled, "I'll blank, I shot him."
Right. So, you know, sort of the excited utterance that would lead one to believe that was an accident. And this is what Brooklyn Center Police Chief Tim Gannon had to say about that video.
As you can hear, the officer, while struggling with Mr. Wright, shouts, "Taser, taser," several times. That is part of the officer's training prior to deploying a taser, which is a less lethal device. That is done to make her partners aware, as well as the subject, that a taser deployment will be imminent. During this encounter, however, the officer drew their handgun instead of their taser. For informational purposes, we train with our handguns on our dominant side and our taser on our weak side. So if you're right-handed, you carry your firearm on your right side and you carry your taser on the left. This is done purposefully and is trained. As I watch the video and listen to the officer's commands, it is my belief that the officer had the intention to deploy their taser, but instead shot Mr. Wright with a single bullet. This appears to me, from what I've viewed and the officer's reaction in distress immediately after, that this was an accidental discharge that resulted in the tragic death of Mr. Wright.
And she's 48-year-old Kimberly Potter, the officer. She joined the force when she was 22 years old, so she's been on there for 26 years. She has two adult sons and a husband that's a police officer in a neighboring suburban police department. And as of right now, no dings on her record. It was a horrible, horrible mistake.
And because it was a mistake or an accident doesn't absolve her of culpability and punishment. The question is, what is that punishment? And so it's interesting to note, of course, the rush to moral panic in these instances, of course. The Brooklyn Center city manager, Kurt Bogani.
Yeah.
He seemed to have disagree with Brooklyn Center Mayor Mike Elliott. Mike Elliott, the mayor there, immediately called for her to be terminated. Kurt Bogani, the city manager, called for due process, and he was fired for calling for due process.
What?
So my question, you know, is always the alternative. Okay, so if not due process, because due process is racist? If not due process, then what? That would be my question for Mike Elliott. My question for Rashida Tlaib, in response to her tweet on the subject, would be the same. Then what? She tweeted, MF or Spice, one of the socialist Spice girls, Rashida Tlaib from Michigan. "It wasn't an accident. Policing in our country is inherently and intentionally racist. Dante Wright was met with aggression and violence. I'm done with those who condone government-funded murder. No more policing, incarceration, and militarization. It can't be reformed." Okay, so no more police, jails.
Okay.
Then what?
Yeah, what's your alternative? Park rangers like they want in Portland?
For more on the topic, we're pleased to be joined by our friend from Mount Minneapolis Way, founder of PowerlineBlog.com, John, and the president of the Center of the American Experiment, John Hindraker. John, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Hey, happy to do it.
The conversation immediately turns to what happens to the officer that accidentally shot him. What's your view on how this has been handled to this point?
Well, you know, the rule here in Minnesota is verdict first, trial later. We've seen that with Derek Chauvin. The defense in the Derek Chauvin trial is going to begin today. And, you know, it's just sort of, you know, black comedy in the sense that this guy has been convicted in the press. He's been convicted by our governor, by the mayor of the city of Minneapolis. He's been convicted by everybody for the last year. And beginning today, the jury is actually going to hear his defense. I have a feeling it may be too late. And this officer, I suppose people are scanning the homicide statutes, you know, murder 2, murder 3, manslaughter, a couple degrees of manslaughter, I believe, you know, parsing the language to figure out what she can be charged with. I think that there's a manslaughter statute that deals specifically with negligent discharge of a firearm. You know, so I assume she's going to be facing some significant criminal charges. But the point I would make, and obviously it's not lost on you, Dan, and Amy, or your audience, you know, there's a reason why things like this happen, right? So they pull this guy over, They run his license, his plates through a computer, and they realize he's got an outstanding arrest warrant for illegally carrying a Ruger 45 caliber pistol in a public place, and then fleeing the police. He got away that time. He ran. He got away. And then just 10 days or so before the stop, he failed to appear for a court hearing in that criminal case. So now they pull him over. At first he gets out of the car and he seems to be complying. He puts his hands behind him and they're about to cuff him. But then he changes his mind. He decides, oh, the heck with it. I'm gonna run. I'm going to flee. So he starts wrestling with the police officers, fighting with the police officers, much like George Floyd. And, he gets in his car and he's obviously about to flee the scene. And so this woman, Potter is her last name, Kimberly Potter, pulls out, she thinks, her taser. And of course, as you're watching the body cam video, you're looking at it and you're saying, lady, that looks like a 9mm Glock to me, not a taser. But in the confusion of the moment, she pulls the wrong thing and she shoots him. Well, why is there confusion? Why is there tumult? Well, it's because this guy is fighting with the police officers. And when you undertake to wrestle with police officers so as to be able to flee the scene after being arrested, there are a lot of bad things that can happen. And this case illustrates that.
And she's already been placed on administrative leave, but listen what the activists in Minneapolis said yesterday.
Dante Wright was killed by this white officer because she did not see his humanity. She did not believe that Black Lives Matter.
I mean, it's such an overreach of the truth. I mean, she didn't shoot him because he was black. She made a mistake. The guy could have been white, too.
Well, one of the officers was black, for what that's worth, but, right, exactly. She mixed up her gun and her taser. It's kind of, none of this has got anything to do with race, but it does have to do with resisting the police, with resisting arrest, with fleeing the scene, which this guy was doing now for the second time, worked for him the first time. And that's the consistent, that's the common denominator in most of these cases.
Mm-hmm. And I know the revolution will be mostly peaceful, but what is the situation on the ground in Minneapolis and in Brooklyn Center now that the National Guard has been scrambled and there's been looting and violence that has occurred?
Well, it's terrible. Frankly, it's just terrible. There was a 7 p.m. curfew last night covering most of the Twin Cities metropolitan area. The Minnesota Twins homeowner got canceled. Other professional sports events were canceled. Everything shut down. There was rioting in Brooklyn Center. And then the police chief gave a press conference, and he referred to the word riot, and a reporter yells, "There was no riot?" And he says, "Yes, there was a riot. I was there." And all these reporters start booing and yelling, "Oh, no riot, peaceful protest."
Right.
And the chief is, and if you look at the video footage, it's a riot. The chief is talking about the fact that, one of his officers was hit in the head with a brick and had to be taken to the hospital, and the protesters, the rioters are hurling various objects at the police officers. But that's the kind of news media that we've got in Minnesota.
Your news media was all over, Gannon. I mean, if any of us acted like that in Chicago, they would shut us down. I couldn't believe that they were screaming at him. I watched that whole press conference and thought, who are these people? And, oh, my gosh, relax.
It's unbelievable, and it starts with the Minneapolis Star Tribune, which is the dominant newspaper in the state. And this morning, they ran a story that was basically a paean, a tribute, to Duante Wright, the guy who was trying to flee the scene and wound up getting shot. And if you look at his Facebook page, it's all guns, wads of cash, drugs, gang signs. And there's just a complete lack of realism about what's going on the streets of these cities.
And so, of course, it's interesting, the curfew, too. I mean, it just seems to be this is sort of their every problem is a nail because all they have is a hammer. Let's lock down the law abiding. It's like locking down the healthy
right. And
turn over the streets to the marauders. I noted the symbolic takings that were occurring at the dollar store, for example.
Yeah, well, that's right. And there's this whole mentality that looting is okay. you know, and I don't, did anybody get arrested for looting? I hope so. But generally speaking, people just go rampaging through strip malls and breaking windows and walking out with merchandise.
Yeah, actually, hasn't there been a call? I thought I saw a call for businesses to stop calling the police about retail theft.
I haven't seen that. It wouldn't be surprising, but I haven't seen that.
If you're a business, I mean, unless there's, you know, an armed robbery, I mean, if it's just retail theft, number one, let the thief go. Number two, don't call police. I don't know, actually. So per Mrs. Warren Wilhelm in New York City, if somebody steals from you, you're not to call police, but you are to try to intercede to stop the theft, or, you know, because there's a promotion of vigilante justice on the one hand, but then this is looting is reparations on the other hand. So it's hard to know what to do as a business owner other than perhaps not locate your business in Minneapolis.
Well, I can tell you what the city of Minneapolis said in a letter to every business located in downtown Minneapolis in advance of the Derek Chauvin trial. They said, well, here are some suggestions. You know, one, you may want to hire private security. Two, you may want to put up permanent barriers, you know, permanent bars and barriers of various kinds to protect your store. And three, whatever you do, make sure you get your important papers off the premises. In other words, your store may get burned down. There's nothing we can do to stop it. So at least move your important papers somewhere else. Kind of a fatalistic approach to rioting and looting.
And this is something that's particularly local, but important context. Since last May, the George Floyd Square, which has become like this George Floyd autonomous zone, yeah. 19 shootings have occurred in the area since Floyd's death, several of them fatal. The aunt of one shooting victim said her nephew was unable to receive medical attention because those occupying the area refused to let law enforcement into the zone. The autonomous zone has also had a negative impact on Black business owners who report they have lost 75% of their business due to the lack of traffic in the area. So I don't think people were aware that there was this lawless autonomous zone going on in Minneapolis like we saw in the Pacific Northwest.
It's true. It is going on. I believe there have been four shooting deaths in that autonomous zone. So everybody knows George Floyd's name, right? You know, the great hero of the movement. I don't know the names of any of those four people who since then have been shot in essentially the same place and killed. And if business is only down by 75%, I'm a little surprised. I would think it'd be down by about 100%. And so it's very much like that Seattle autonomous zone that the police finally came in and cleared out. It's a lawless area, and this is one of the ways in which cities die.
Do you expect that the defund police movement, especially with this happening in Ilhan Omar's backyard, will find renewed energy?
Yes. Well, I think it will. I mean, you know, the Minneapolis City Council actually voted to take steps toward defunding the police, which they don't have a legal ability to do. So what they wanted to do was to amend the Minneapolis City Charter, which requires a police force of a certain size, and change that to some kind of social worker force or, you know, something. And there's a lawsuit going on right now in which mostly Black residents of the north side of Minneapolis are suing to try to make the city comply with the charter and bring on board enough police officers to meet that requirement. So there's a lot going on. Yeah, there's a defund the police movement. There's also a pushback, a refund the police movement, which is coming in large part from Black residents.
He is John Hinderaker. He's the president of the Center for the American Experiment and founder of PowerlineBlog.com. John, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, Dan. Bye-bye.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.